top girls can really light up a room. Look at that smile. Age-appropriate women just do not smile like that. Those eyes, that mouth. Age-appropriate women never laugh.
This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with The Truth Will Live. We'll be discussing do leftists have legitimate grievances and a number of other topics. The Truth Will Live, it's great having you back on. How have you been?
Good. How are you, Robert?
Great. So, you have this, so you're back to making videos, I see.
Well, yeah, I made it. Well, one of them I recorded in March, and I just hadn't uploaded it. Didn't think it was that great. And then I made another one that I had been planning for months, and then I just kind of felt like doing it, so I just went ahead and did it.
The video you did from a while back, Do Leftists Have Legitimate Grievances?
Yeah.
You talk about why people become leftist, and I want to, first, you didn't really get into this, but were these specifically the reasons you started off on the left, or not necessarily?
I don't know if I was ever really a leftist, because I was never, like, a socialist, and I was just kind of like a moderate liberal-ish, you know, I just bought into like all of the pop cultural memes, but I was never like sold on like socialism. Like I always thought that sounded kind of dumb, but, I think, yeah, the reason a lot of people become left-wing is because like what I was saying, they see this sort of consumerist, materialist, empty society, and they are searching for meaning. And I think they feel like they want to have agency, or they want to positively impact the world to add meaning to their lives. So, popular idea is that they can, destroy capitalism because that's like the root of all evil, or destroy Walmart and stuff like that. And I guess like I like relate to that because I think the sort of mainstream American society does kind of revolve around that, and they also see like right wing people in general are sort of like the gatekeepers of capitalism and mediocrity, basically, which is, I guess it's different. Like when I actually think of like conservatism, like true conservatism, I think of like conserving cultures and ways of life. But I can see why like calling myself conservative to most people would be confusing to them. Because it's like, I say, well, oh, like the Republican Party, that's not true conservatism. But that's kind of, in a way, almost similar to left-wing people saying like, oh, like Russia wasn't true socialism, or the Democratic Party isn't true left-wing. So it's kind of like, no, we're not so different in a way. But I think that's actually, it's kind of like a good thing. Like it could be like a gateway drug. Like if people become disillusioned with the left and they work into that for the same reasons that I've pointed out, I think like the alt-right is probably like the natural home.
Yeah, I've noticed that people who get involved with the alt-right or neo-reaction, a lot of them are disillusioned leftists rather than people who come from mainstream conservatism. Because basically mainstream conservatism in this country is a coalition of two groups of people who are concerned about basically like business interests and capitalists, and then you have the religious right and the evangelicals. So they're not, I don't see as many people coming from those groups. But what inspired you to make this video is this interview Richard Spencer did on Red Ice Radio called Surviving the Global Monoculture. And he basically talks about the same themes in your video.
Yeah, I didn't rip him off, but I kind of like took his idea about how those people that on the left who want to get rid of globalism and capitalism and, you know, live a more fulfilling life, like, they have the right idea, and they're just sort of channeling that. They see that as, like, the most obvious place to go because, yeah, they associate the right wing with all those bad things that I pointed out. But there's also, like, there's people that are kind of on the alt-right but don't really fit in because I think you're kind of one of them, personally. Like, they're like, race realists, usually, but more liberal or more socialist, like, more socialist or anti-religious, like, atheist. And, like, those people, they don't really fit in anywhere, but I kind of, like, I'm not a liberal, but I kind of understand where they're coming from.
You get a lot of diversity within the alternative right. You get people who are left-wing economically, kind of socialist. You get homosexuals.
Yeah.
You get all kinds of people all over the place, people who are socially liberal, economically leftist. It's just sort of a big... It's not really I would describe it as not being like a... the alternative right, per se, not being a specific ideology. It's basically people who are disillusioned with the status quo and the current establishment.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that... I think the thing that unites a lot of the people, not everyone, but a lot of people, is that it's like people who are really adamantly realist and sort of not pessimistic, but honest about the way humans actually are. Whereas, and you see this on the mainstream right too, but the left and like the radical left is still sort of like steeped in illusion. But really, like, I can see why, you know, those people that are socialists, but sort of like race realists and stuff, like, feel like they don't fit in anywhere because those two things don't necessarily have that much in common. And, like, socialism doesn't necessarily go with, like, being, like, a race denier or whatnot. But it does, like, in the current system for some reason. So, but I guess it kind of was, like, I don't know, even, like, the traditional socialists, like, they had that whole, like, international... workers of the world, like, internationalism. So I don't really know. I don't know that much about it, personally, because I wasn't ever, like, involved in that. I mean, I know people who were, but I wasn't personally. So.
What you were pointing out is you don't really know that much about economics. You don't have an economic background, but the main interest you have is the points you made is you don't know that much about capitalism from an economic standpoint. But the point that the legitimate grievance they have is more the cultural and aesthetic aspects of capitalism.
Yeah.
And we discussed that a lot in our last show, where you get these bland suburbs and this consumer culture that's very, very bland. And a lot of people who grew up with that, they become disillusioned from that, and they're looking for something more more exciting, inspirational, maybe something spiritual. Some of these, like, leftists, some of them get into stuff like Eastern spirituality, or some of them turn more to hedonism. And then on the other hand, you get people grow up in the evangelical sort of mega church culture, and I forget the way you describe it specifically, but that's basically an extension of pop culture as well.
Yeah. I think a lot of those people, since they're so disillusioned with the way they grew up and their culture, the way it currently is, they kind of, like, seek this refuge in the other, in the alien. Like, the thing, I think Rachel pointed this out once, about how a lot of white people adapt Eastern religion or other cultures because they feel like they don't really, or their culture is, I don't think that they actually think it's destroyed, but I think that they think it's, like, sort of inherently shallow. And I have to agree that, like, the way things are now, it is. But, like, that's the whole thing with, like, the alt-right is, like, trying to revive, like, a more organic, traditional Western culture. Because there is a lot there. It's just almost like, it's almost like it's been kept from people. Because, like, in the 1960s, you know, I don't know what exactly happened in the 60s, but it was like people just wanted to destroy their culture. Maybe they were too comfortable or something. I don't know exactly, like, all of the reasons for this. I'm sure it's complex, but, yeah.
What else is kind of interesting is a lot of leftists are anti-American because they see America mm-hmm. as a vehicle for a, like, global monoculture. And, ironically, a lot of people in the alternative right, there's definitely an anti-American streak there where people yeah. want to like bring back more, like, their ancestral European culture, and they reject yeah. the United States. There's a perception that, like, leftists who are anti-American are, like, anti-white, but I don't think that's necessarily the case completely. I think a lot of the You have, like, the social justice warriors, but a lot of people just see America as being a vehicle for, like, a global monoculture, as Richard Spencer was pointing out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have, I have issues with America, too, like, ideological issues with the whole project, but, like, I mean, I like the American people, like, I think it's a, you know, it's a special bunch of people, you know, like the masses. You can talk about the masses and how they're just, you know, sheeple and everything. But, like, there's a lot of people that are really cool and special. So I guess, what is a nation if not the people? And do those leftists who hate America hate the American people? They might, because they might think that, you know, they might think of the masses. Here's the thing, like, I don't necessarily relate to the masses, but I don't hate them either. So, I don't know. I don't idealize Europe that much more because I feel like they have, like, a lot of the same issues that we have here. Maybe not so much in certain areas, but, yeah.
Yes, they do have a lot of the same problems. But from a cultural standpoint, they have a stronger sense of identity.
Yeah, that is true. But also, like, I've heard people, like my Scottish friend, complain that he didn't have, when he was in school, he didn't feel like there was any sort of, inculcation of a British identity or a patriotism or an identity. Like, I do kind of think they're on the same stuff. Maybe some countries have more of an identity, but it's kind of going in the same direction. The whole, like, monocultural, internationalist direction. And, you know, part of that whole internationalist, like, destruction of localism might have to do with technology in a way. Because, like, I mean, I don't think there has been any other time in history where you can just get on a plane and go wherever you want in the world and, like, be there overnight. So, like, it kind of, in some ways, it makes sense. But it doesn't mean it's a good thing. It just, yeah.
So do you think it's inevitable that the whole world will have a global monoculture?
It already, no. Not if people, like, take steps to preserve their own culture.
So one of the commentators in your video made a point that they said a lot of these leftists, they don't necessarily hate Western civilization. What they hate is global capitalism.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say what the left need is a heavy dose of a HBD.
Yeah. They're so adamantly against that right now that it's hard to see happening. Like, if there was going to be any sort of, like, left-wing HBD movement, it would, like, spring out of the alt-right, I think.
There is a left-wing HBD blogger named Robert Lindsay, but he's totally disowned by most of the left.
Yeah, exactly. You get disowned by the left if, you know, you're into that, basically, so.
You were talking about this, these Myers-Briggs tests, and they talk about, like, personality types.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, a lot of people will say that's just, like, junk psychology or pseudoscience or something, but...
Or called pop psychology is what they call it.
Yeah. A lot of the personality types, like, there's actually, like, a correlation with things that you'll be into or the direction that you'll go. Like, a lot of people on the alt-right are INTP or INTJ. It's like
I took
90%.
I took that quiz and I got INTP.
Yeah, it's like 90% of people
you have
on the alt right are. Yeah, I have. I'm INTP too. So
it stands
definitely
for introverted, intuitive, thinking, perceiving.
Yeah, it's people that think a lot, I think, and maybe think about. Issues bigger than themselves, I would guess. Like, maybe people who aren't so concerned with what's happening immediately in the situation and are more, or maybe people that are more intellectually curious, like, that could be part of it, too. I think that's definitely part of it. And I think there's also, like, I wouldn't picture an INTP being, like, a super spiritual person. It would be more like someone who's maybe more stays home and is, like, on the internet all the time. Like, there was this blog post that I read that said, like, here's why you're still single, and it, like, for all the different personality types. And for INTP, it was you haven't left the house in 3 months, and when you do meet your lover, it'll be like playing World of Warcraft or something, which, like, yeah, that's probably it. Because, I mean, yeah, everyone on the alt-right is, like, on the internet all the time, like, reading crap. So.
Well, I see this article I found. I found this from the group on Facebook. People with this personality type are most likely to be unemployed. And let's see what it says. INTP, I think. FP is most likely to be unemployed. INTP is least likely. I don't know. I mean, I don't know all the names
INTP
of these different personality types.
INTP is least
type.
Likely to be unemployed?
No,
like
most likely.
Third most likely.
No, second most likely to be unemployed.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And it's also, like, the person is probably, I think INTPs are also a little bit disorganized, usually. Does that sound like you?
Yeah, some of the
time.
You're
disorganized? I'm disorganized, but I'm not, like, I clean up, you know, I'm not, like, crazy or anything. My house is clean, but I'm not organized in a lot of ways.
Do you think they're perceived as being or being like on the autistic spectrum?
I could definitely see like maybe an Asperger's autism connection there. But a lot of people on the alt-right are also kind of like Asperger. Like, that's another stereotype. Isn't that?
Yes. Well, yeah. The thing is, people with Asperger's are non-conformists, so they don't care what other people think of them as much.
Would you describe yourself as oppositional defiant?
Oppositional defiant?
Do you know what that is?
I've heard of it, but explain what it means.
It's like a mental disorder, supposedly, where you don't listen to authority. So you oppose authority, like, a lot. I don't actually think... I mean, I think I'm a little bit that way, maybe. But I'm not, like... I don't know. I wasn't that bad. But that's, like, a lot of kids. Like, if they don't do their homework and... stuff like that, like they can be categorized as oppositional defiant.
Yeah, it could be true.
Yeah.
But I don't see how that has to be a bad thing. It depends. It can be disruptive, but it can be used for good.
Yeah. I think like if you actually are classified with the disorder, it would only be like in an extreme scenario where you like literally will not do anything that you're told. I'm not like that. I guess I don't care, like, if people tell me, like, what this is the correct thing to think. Like, it doesn't matter to me. Like, I care about, like, what's actually real. So, anyway.
So on that study, the least likely to be unemployed are ENFJs.
Oh, really?
Let me see what that stands for.
I think, actually, my best friend was maybe an ENFJ. She is, like, very she's pretty, like, good at going for the career thing.
Okay, it stands for extroverted feeling with introverted intuition. Huh.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think extroverted people, it would make sense that they're less likely to be unemployed in general.
Would you say you're more
classified as? I think I'm more introverted, but it's tough to say because I do like talking to people and being around people. But I don't like being around like a lot of people at one time. I'm better at talking to like one person at a time usually.
Also depends if they're interesting. Some people.
Exactly. Yeah.
It depends.
I don't like
some
talking
people
to boring
just
people.
Like. Yeah.
Yeah. People do. Like, a lot of people do bore me. Like, I'll be frank. Like. A lot of people just don't have much to say, and I have a lot to say, and I talk a lot, so.
Do you think with that do you think this has, like, a relevance to HBD? Like, do some ethnic groups have more common personality types?
That's a really good question. I would imagine so. I mean, that would make sense, wouldn't it? Like, the Facebook INTP group, there are definitely, like, black people in it. So, I don't know. I have no idea if that's correlated or not. You could probably Google it. Check it out. INTP race. There's, like, a lot of stuff that you can look up.
Let's see. Well, let me do a quick Google search for it. INTP race.
Yeah, I found one. Skeptics Esoterica. Let's see, who are INTPs? INTPs are likely to be scientists, philosophers, lawyers, architects, and economists. That actually makes a lot of sense. Philosophers. So that's like the alt-right. I think a lot of people on the alt-right are full philosophical. Let's see, so there's a list of people who are INTP by ethnicity. Most of them are Jewish, English, German. There's a lot of Jews on here. That makes sense that a lot of Jews would be INTP, I think. a lot of Jews. I
have
think,
you found that to be true?
Huh?
Have you found that to be true?
I think, yeah. What I found to be true in the Jewish community is, like, I feel like there's a higher rate of, like, autism spectrum or, like, Asperger's. And
you haven't?
I think it has to do, I haven't, no. But I definitely, like, interacted with a lot of people who did growing up, like, a lot. There were, like, whole families of people who were definitely Asperger's. And I think it has something that it might have to do, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
That's interesting you point that out, because there's a blogger. Are you familiar with that blogger, Jew Among You?
Yeah.
He was saying that, I think he was mentioning he has Asperger's, and he did some thing with, he was saying he couldn't get a date, like, on his own because of his social skills.
I saw that
skills.
Too.
But because he had went to a matchmaking service in Israel, so maybe the traditional, like, matchmaking system put more of an emphasis on intelligence, but it also led to an increase in the number of people with Asperger's. I think that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might also have to do with, like, inbreeding, to be frank.
Yeah.
But okay, so this is what it says. Percentage of ethnicity who are INTPs. They don't have Caucasian. It's 8.76%. Japanese and Chinese have a higher rate. Mixed ethnicity, 6%. Filipino, 1.3%. See? INTP statistics by race. African-American, 4%. Asian, 4.8%. Caucasian, 4.5%. Indian, 5.8%. Latino, 2%. That makes sense. So it's pretty evenly distributed, except for Latinos are less. I guess, do you know that many, like, intellectually curious Latinos?
I had a friend who was definitely INTP, but he was basically, he was from, his family is from Mexico, but, like, ethnically, he was Spanish, but he basically was INTP.
Yeah, I would imagine there is, like, a racial correlation with the personality types, but it might be hard to find information on that. It's a pretty HBD topic.
Well, it is. Do you know who writes, the blogger Robert Lindsay writes a lot about that topic?
Yeah. About,
he's written a lot about personality types, yeah.
Interesting. Pretty cool. Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting. But yeah, a lot of people just dismiss it as, like, a total junk science thing.
What was that thing you were posting, all these pictures on Twitter of these, like, blonde actresses?
Oh. Well, because,
what,
like,
was the point you
someone
were...
Someone said the only reason why Scarlett Johansson is hot is because she's half white. So I was just like, no, they're, like, totally hot, full Jewesses out there. Helen Slater comes to mind. But it was kind of dumb, I know. And I think after that, someone accused me of pretending. I got, like, a Ask FM thing and said, why do you pretend to be European when you're not? I don't think maybe it was because of that. But I don't pretend to be European. I just, I say, like, what I am. Like, if someone wants, some people will consider me European and some won't. Like, I don't really care or whatever. So, that's that.
And who was that thing, and you linked to that? You linked to the video, Jewish heroin overdose, Jewish Hollywood starlets. But how come you're not in that?
Well, I'm not. I'm
not
a heroine. I'm not a Hollywood heroine. That guy is kind of funny. Like, he's a YouTube. He's like an Israeli guy on YouTube who's, like, really into, like, HBD or something like that. And I don't know. Yeah, he makes really weird videos.
Yeah, the comments. Just a lot of funny comments on that video.
I haven't actually seen all of them. What did I say? You probably have a million downvotes, right?
Yeah, they do.
All his videos get like a ton of downvotes.
Yeah, a lot of blondes. Like half of them are blonde.
Yeah. Well, aren't men like usually more attracted to blonde women? Like, isn't that like proven?
Is that why you started doing the blonde thing?
No! Stop accusing me of that. No, I just like blonde hair. A lot of people dye their hair. I dyed it way before I was, like, into any of this, so it has nothing to do with that. Maybe I'll buy it back just so you'll stop bugging me about it.
Have you ever dyed it black?
Yeah, for a little bit.
You should try that.
No, I'd rather just have it be my natural color, if anything. I think the black was, because I have really pale skin, and I don't think it looked good with my black hair. It made me look kind of sickly.
So yeah. You have this other video. This is your most recent one, chastity, monogamy, mm-hmm. and slut shaming.
Yeah. Hey, I got a message from, not to brag, but I was really excited. I got a message from, I like CC'd Jared Taylor on a tweet that I tweeted. And then he sent me a message saying, like, he liked my video and it's a really important subject. And important for the chastity one. It is important for the health of society and shouldn't be connected with Christian morality. Is he, like, anti-Christian? Like, what is his deal with religion? I've never heard him talk about it.
Sure where he stands on religion.
Yeah, me neither. It would be interesting to know. It was kind of like...
But you make your arguments in the video from a secular, practical, like, scientific, secular
exactly.
standpoint. You don't necessarily use religious
yeah.
arguments.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, some people don't like that. Like, someone left a really good comment under that video saying, I don't believe in God, but, like, this is, like, these principles make the most sense if you want to have a healthy society. And I, tweeted that, and I knew I was going to get crap from Christians for saying that, but I don't really care, like, if it's the truth, like, and maybe, I'm not, like, saying their religion is false, but their religion does have a practical use also. Like, it's not just for fun. It has, like, a utilitarian purpose, in my opinion.
Well, Luke Ford has been making this point. I mean, he grew up Christian, and Christianity
yeah.
puts a strong emphasis on, like, chastity and sexual morality.
Yeah.
But, I mean, in Judaism, it's less of an emphasis.
With the Orthodox, it's not. Like, are you referring
to... What Luke was saying, like, the ultra-Orthodox it is, but, like, there's also the modern Orthodox. Like, most of them will have premarital sex.
Really?
That's what Luke said.
I don't think so. He said to me that most Orthodox are virgins until they get married. Like, they're not even allowed to, like, touch each other. Not saying that some of them don't, but I would imagine, like, I don't know the exact statistics, but yeah, usually like in any religion, like the more conservative you go, the more they stick to it. But they definitely like emphasize that in the modern Orthodox. But in the conservative and reform, like they never even brought that up. So apparently they don't care about it.
Conservative is the one you grew up with.
Yeah, they didn't really like talk about morality ever, aside from like giving charity, and you know, it was almost just like secular humanism or something. There wasn't any like really much restriction on your behavior. Like they would never, I can't imagine them like ever discussing like sexuality or anything like that, which is kind of dumb in my opinion. I don't know.
So what are the, so you make some of the practical arguments for chastity And the context was this, is you were on the INTP Facebook group and people were kind of joking, oh, if you have premarital sex, you're going to hell. Like the kind of religious argument that people just do certain things for religious reasons. Like they don't want to offend the religious group, or they're worried about going to hell, for instance. But you make sort of practical secular arguments why that behavior is bad. Why that behavior is bad for people. What are the main arguments you make?
I think, well, for one thing, I think if religious people want to be taken more seriously, they have to, like, emphasize these things, because maybe 50 years ago, like, what I was saying in that video may have been common knowledge, but, like, in the span of 50 years, it's just not anymore, because people stopped saying it, basically. But, like, older baby boomers will know all of this stuff, but they didn't tell their kids because they decided that it was too repressive and they didn't really understand what they were doing. But they kind of grew up with the benefit of having that background there without realizing it. But, so they just took it for granted. Like, I really think a lot of them probably just thought, oh, well, like, my kids will just, everyone knows that. But it's not, I don't think this stuff is necessarily so obvious. What were the arguments? Basically that, men and women, like the way they're biologically programmed is, well, okay, first of all, like the main biological purpose of human existence is to reproduce yourself. Like that is in your evolutionary interest, is to reproduce yourself and spread your genes. So you basically, you also, and it's not just like having children, it's like you want your genes to continue in the gene pool, so you'll want your children to have grandchildren too. So the best way to like ensure the survival of your offspring for women is to have like a provider. So basically, I think women are programmed to want commitment. And men, like, they're going to increase their chances of propagating their genes if they, I think there are some men that actually are programmed to be provider types, but also a lot of them are programmed to spread their seed out more because they will have more chances of having offspring that way. And, it's like, I think people say, like, sperm is cheap, eggs are expensive, because a woman only has one womb that she has to, invest in. So, go ahead.
What's your take on the whole campaign against slut shaming?
Slut shaming?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, where slut shaming comes from, usually it's women doing slut shaming, like, traditionally it was. It is men, too, and to a certain extent. But I think, like, when basically with this whole system where people don't sleep together before they're married, it works the best if everyone is doing it, because if there's one chick who's sleeping around, then all the guys can sleep with her, and it lowers the chances that the other women in the community will be able to find a man to commit to them. So I think when a woman is promiscuous, other women can sense this, and they can sense that it'll drive down their value or their chances. So that's where it's kind of like a backup strategy to prevent that from happening. The other thing, the reason why it's a good idea is because men are not programmed to want to commit to a promiscuous woman because they are not able to ensure if their offspring is theirs. That way, like, they will get cucked. They might be getting cucked. So they're, if they think, like, there's any chance that this woman will cuck them or cheat on them, or that there's a chance that they'll be raising someone else's kid, they're a lot less likely to invest resources in her long term. That has anything to do with God or heaven or hell or anything. Like, it really is a very practical thing. And the other thing that we see pop, I hadn't discussed in the video, I might make another one discussing it, was it also solves, like, this problem with consent, because we're seeing now, like, all these rape scandals and date rape accusations and everything, with a lot of people will say it's, you know, it's hard to determine whether that was rape or not, or whether consent happened, or, you know, maybe the girl just regretted it, or maybe the guy really did rape her or whatnot. So, like, that whole marriage contract, like, also solved the problem of consent for people. Because now you get, there are even, like, I think activist groups that say you need to, like, sign a contract. Or they want this to be a thing where you, like, have to sign a contract to give your consent. Because in so many cases, it's really tricky to prove whether or not consent happened. So it's like they're kind of almost like going back to this traditional thing, like, without realizing it, which is kind of funny. Like, I don't really have a problem with it, because it's kind of funny, but a lot of other people are, like, you know, freaking out about it. It doesn't really bother me. Like, if it means people are going to be, like, less promiscuous, like, fine, whatever. It's probably good for them.
So, did you get a chance to, are you familiar with the Roger Devlin book, Sexual Utopia and Power?
No, but I listened to your interview with him, so I guess I kind of know about it, but I haven't read the book.
But the main point he makes in his book is that social conservatives want to focus on regulating male sexuality, and he thinks that it's more important to regulate female sexuality.
It really is, but it's really hard to get females to listen if it's a male telling them. So, like, there need to be other women. That's, like, part of the reason I did this, is because I think a woman is more likely to listen to a woman give, like, her experience rather than a man telling her what to do. That's my opinion. But there are women out there who, like, talk about this stuff. Like, there's quite a few. Most of them are religious, though.
I noticed that, yeah, the manosphere is actually fairly secular for the most part.
The manosphere?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like the manosphere like, it depends on which stuff. Like, I kind of like Cartiste, but a lot of it's, like, really nihilistic and hedonistic. So I don't approve of a lot of the manosphere, but some of it's interesting. At least, some of them are at least honest, which I kind of like, but I don't like Rouge or pickup artist stuff or anything like that, because I think a lot of what it is manipulating women to sleep with them. And, like, someone told me that some of these guys, like, they'll go to, like, Eastern Europe and, like, talk these girls into sleeping with them and, like, promise them, like, commitment, which is, like, really sort of psychopathic, because these are, like, girls from, like, religious countries who, like, yeah, these are, like, formerly communist religious countries, and they're, like, being promised commitment by some American guy or Western guy, and then he just, like, does that to manipulate them and sleep with them. Like, that's pretty psychopathic. I don't know, like, how often that actually happens, but someone told me that that's, like, a thing that people do, which is
I've heard that,
really
too, yeah.
Disturbing. You have?
Yeah, I've heard, yeah, I have.
I feel like Rouge would probably do that. Like, maybe not so much anymore. Like, I think he actually maybe got sick of sleeping with people because he wrote, like, this neo-masculinity manifesto. Yeah, he, like, I felt like he was changing his tune because he wrote this neo-masculinity manifesto where he was, like, saying, basically, like, get married and don't stop sleeping around with women because it's just, like, this hedonistic pursuit that will, like, lead you to despair. So maybe he finally, you know, realized that. And if he did, that's really cool. I hope that's what happened. Kind of seemed like it. I think Hartiste, I didn't start reading Hartiste until recently, but apparently he was more like a pickup artist, game guy in the past. And now he's like, I heard he got married and he mostly writes a lot about white nationalism. And he also writes a lot of posts about like women, like having their eggs dry up and that type of thing. Or like feminist stuff. Feminist, anti-feminist diatribes and stuff like that. I don't see a ton of like, here's how to like manipulate women sleeping with you.
do you think a lot of these trends will harm like women in the long run?
Guys tricking them into sleeping with them, or
like
which trends?
Definitely.
I think it'll hurt everyone, not even just women, but probably women more, yeah. I think, like, this is going to sound maybe a little nutty. I don't really care, though, because this is, like, what I think, like, a lot of religious people, or some even secular people say, like, if you remove, like, the natural end from sex, like, if you only ever have recreational sex, like, you are, like, disturbing the harmony of the human system or like the biological system. It's like, here's another example. Like when chickens, when you raise chickens and they lay eggs and you eat the eggs, but when they, some of the chickens, when they realize their eggs aren't hatching, they start kind of going crazy a little bit. Like they start plucking their feathers out. Some of them will hide their eggs. So, stuff like that. And, like, I think the parallel to that would be women maybe having mental disorders or, like, maybe getting pregnant on purpose and pretending like it was an accident. Like, I think I know a lot of girls who had kids out of wedlock and it was supposedly an accident. Or maybe it wasn't. I don't really know. I'm guessing they told their boyfriends it was an accident, but I have a really hard time believing that these were all accidents because it all seemed to happen around the same time and it just seems kind of unlikely to me.
What is your take on that story from Norway that Roger Devlin talked about?
Oh, with the Norwegian guys, like, getting beat up by Muslims and stuff?
Yeah.
Or having their women taken away from them? That was like really heartbreaking for me to read and really sad. Basically, the most interesting part of that article, though, was someone who wrote a comment about it. And the comment said, the secret to Muslim success is that they have children with their own women. They have children with their conquest women. And the culture that they conquest, they have no children. So they have, you know, they have polygamy and everything. And then their basically tirade against that was, Christianity prevents polygamy, and white nationalism prevents white guys from race mixing, from taking like Arab women. So that's how they were like convinced that was the reason like they're bound to lose. And if you look at it from like a really utilitarian, like might is right perspective, like, it's a really scary thought. that, like, just because, you know, Christianity is maybe more ethical. I mean, it is more ethical than Islam and, like, whatever. It doesn't necessarily mean it's, like, a winning strategy. And it's just kind of scary to think about. I don't know. Like, I'm not saying they should change their strategy or whatever, but I think they need to, like, realize all of that stuff. They're really looking to win or not get taken over.
Do you think morality and altruism are weaknesses? And do you think people need
to be more
nihilistic?
I don't think people should be nihilistic, but I think they should be more realistic. I don't think morality or, like, ethics is... I think it's a good thing. It's, like, the way to, like, live a more satisfying life. But, like, maybe sometimes if you... your altruism is causing you to be destroyed, or your morality is causing you to be destroyed, maybe you have to make some temporary changes to it. So, I guess I'm kind of a utilitarian in some ways.
And you've talked about Christianity in some of your shows you do on religion, and you talk about how Christianity has changed, and there was this period in time when Christians were conquering other people, and they were very powerful. And you make the point, they were very successful, and they were dominant, but, like, were they truly following Christianity and the teachings of Christ? And then I think, Luke, you sound like Barack Obama when he said that ISIS are not like real Muslims.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Except for ISIS, like, they are following, like, the Quran. But, yeah, if you read the New Testament, it is kind of like a turn-the-other-cheek thing. But I actually, like, someone on Facebook the other day posted something that said, Christian, like, American Christians, it was some left-wing guy. He said, American Christians, they need to start living as Christians. So this has nothing to do with the free market or... a strong military or monogamous marriage. And I think he was wrong about two out of those three things. Like, I actually, like, combed the New Testament, and there's definitely more stuff in the Old Testament about fighting and to support, like, a military conquest, I think.
A lot of those evangelical types are really into the Old Testament, but the thing is they won't stand up for Europeans, but they sort of live vicariously through Israel, and they're very sort of warmongering, but they channel their energy through the sort of neoconservative thing.
They're very anti-Islam, which is...
Would you call them conservatives?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. I mean, like, basically a conservative is, like, any conservative who's, like, not a white nationalist. That's, like, kind of what I take from it. Isn't that what it seems like at this point?
I guess.
But seriously, like, what is white nationalism? All that really means is, like, opposing, like, the replacement of your ethnic group in your country. Is that really that bad? You know? Like, isn't that pretty basic?
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. So, like, it's funny, like, you can... Maybe, like, someone was telling me, like, maybe white nationalists need to, like, rebrand or something, like, because maybe too many people just associate it with Nazis. I don't know. I'm not
it's
in charge of the white nationalists.
Self preservation, it's just self-preservation.
Self-preservation, yeah, something like that. I think that would maybe be more appealing to more people.
Well, another thing of leftists is this ties in with our original topic, is leftists associate nationalism with imperialism.
Mm.
And,
oh, really?
Yeah. And I think some people on the alternative right are, what's interesting is they're very much opposed to so you get leftists who are anti-nationalists because they see nationalism as tied with traditional European imperialism. But then you get people on the alternative right who are very much opposed to American imperialism, and they're very anti-war. Mm-hmm. They're opposed to American cultural imperialism. But it's ironic.
I know some people on the alt-right who are for imperialism, though.
That could be true. But I'm talking about a segment. There's a segment.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I'd say most of them probably are not pro-imperialism, but some of them are, especially the more, like, traditionalist types. But, yeah.
But it's kind
of ironic. I don't
really
know. I'm pretty neutral on that issue.
So I would like to thank The Truth Will Live for being on the show.
Great. Thank you, Robert. It was great.
That's all we have for today's show. So take care. I'm back with you next time.
Thanks. Bye.